access number 12404, Real 3.
Wing Commander Brown, Real 3.
The Germans obviously had standing patrols, which, as soon as the squadrons had left, go back to refuel, they would bring in their Stukas and 111s. And there was no way we could have a permanent patrol over Dunkirk. Just weren't enough airplanes. We went to Croydon on the 4th, on the 6th to Hawkinge, and then did an escort on Squadron of Blenheims. They were going out to do some bombing somewhere near La Pole. Of course, the army was then retreating. British army was retreating as fast as they could. They'd been cornered up in Dunkirk, and the rest were moving south and west to try and get out the Atlantic ports. I was leading the rear flight, which was the tail end Charlie flight, doing the top cover on the squadron, and picked up a 109 east of Abbeville. Told the CO that I was going after him. I was more or less vertically above him, a stupid position to be in, but I just caught the glimpse of him 3,000 or 4,000 feet below me. Took a burst at him, but not much hope of hitting him. Shot past him. Pulled up, looked around, couldn't see anything, couldn't see the Blenheims, couldn't see the Hurricanes, couldn't see my number two. So I thought, right, well, I'll carry on flying east until I can see the squadron.
Flying east?
Flying back into France, because the squadron was going in with the Blenheims. So I went back in, try and pick them up, couldn't see them. I was then about 20,000, I suppose. And then, on my left, saw what I thought was a squadron coming out. So I thought, oh, jolly good. Turned over, dived down onto them, only to see a silver one in the middle. Well, that wasn't right. And, of course, they were 109s. Well, they saw me as well. And 5 minutes later, I was stopped a cannon shell in my gravity tank. Cockpit got pretty red hot, and it was time to leave. Now, having sat in the Hurricane ever since the darn thing was invented, I never thought that I'd ever have to bail out of the thing. I can't recall that anyone gave me any bailout drill. There was a panel on the right which you were supposed to lower and go over to the right-hand side. But you always entered and left a Hurricane by the left-hand side, and that was the side I decided I'd better go out. So I stood up in the seat. Didn't attempt to jump out, I just stood up. And I was out. Wrapped myself around the tail plane, which didn't do me a lot of good.
You hit it with a thump?
I hit it with quite a thump with my right leg. Extremely painful. I got a few burns, nothing serious, but a few. And I always remember it was beautifully warm and I wanted to go to sleep. then something made me say to myself, pull the ripcord, you bloody fool. So I pulled it, sharp jerk, and there I am on my brolly.
Why did you have to leave a hurricane by the left?
I didn't have to, I just did it. It was sheer instinct. I couldn't stay in the cockpit because it was flaming. I mean, it really was far too hot to stay in. But I didn't do any evacuation drill. As I say, one got into the cockpit from the left and you got out of it from the left, and that was the way I decided I'd go out. I suppose I was more or less going vertically. I got a lot of speed on, and I knew I had to knock the speed off. So I wasn't going straight and level. And as soon as I slid the hood back, the flames all leapt up, of course, at me. So out I went. Anyhow, I knocked my leg about quite a bit, and I thought I'd broken it. And it was very, very painful. I passed out. Came to in a village with a lot of interested Frenchmen in bicycles and farm implements were looking at me. And my best schoolboy French was brought to bear, and they carried me into a small chateau, or the lodge gates of a small chateau, where a dear old lady decided to feed me cognac, and I think this was the third time you could hear the guns going, because we were very close to the German lines and the fighting area, and I suppose if the wind had been from the south, I'd have spent 5 years in the bag. But she then produced some guardsmen, Scots guards I think they were, who were moving south. And there was a doctor among them. He took a look at me. Gave me a quick morphine injection, I suppose it was. And not long afterwards an ambulance arrived and I was pushed into the ambulance. Two or three wounded chaps in there. Went to a field hospital somewhere, I don't know where. Spent 3 days there. Funnily enough, in the next bed was the pilot of one of the Blenheims, who says, what were you doing when I got shot down? To which I replied, what do you think I'm doing here? We then got on a hospital train, a French hospital train, which took us out through Le Mans. I remember going through Le Mans. And we finished up at Saint-Lorient.
What day was it that you were shot down?
6th of June. Put us aboard a hospital ship. And we finished up, I don't know, Southampton, Portsmouth. I don't know. And went into a hospital at somewhere near Harrow. I was out of action for over 2 months before I could really hobble around properly. And finally, it was posted back to the squadron.
When was that?
15th of August at Croydon.
What was the situation in the squadron when you got back?
Well, of course, I arrived the day the Hun decided to bomb Croydon. So that was, perhaps they knew I was going back, I don't know. So that wasn't a very pleasant experience.
Can you remember what happened?
Well, they bombed the control tower. killed two or three of our airmen in the ops room, killed the old squadron pet. We had a Staffordshire Bull Terrier. And he was badly injured and couldn't get him out from under the stonework. And I remember Canadian had Johnny Walker, had the unfortunate job of crawling in underneath and shooting poor old Butcher, I think we used to call him, put him out of his misery. But there were also two or three chaps killed, and I always remember one young telephonist who was lying there with half her head blown off. So it wasn't much of a welcome back to the squadron.
She was a WAF.
Say again?
She was a WAF, was she?
No, she was a civilian telephonist in the control tower there. So I then took a magister up, went to Debden, did a bit of practice flying because I hadn't flown for a couple of months. Then on the 17th, I had my first Hurricane flight since June. Did three flights then, in fact.
From Debden?
No, Debden to Croydon. We went back to Croydon. We scrambled back to Croydon on the 17th. Then on the 18th, again we were scrambled when they did the big raid on Kenley. The Dornier low-level raid.
Do you remember going up on that day?
Oh, yes, very much. We were scrambled to get us off the airfield. We weren't scrambled to intercept anything. It wasn't until we were airborne that we were vectored to intercept these Dorniers who were coming in at very low level. And we picked them up, I don't know, about 10 miles from Kenley, I suppose, and just about got into firing range. I was leading blue section there. And I got a long range burst in at the leader of one of their sections. And he broke formation and pulled up, and I was damn certain that I must have hit him, otherwise he wouldn't have done it. But just at that moment, as we were about to cross the airfield after these chaps, the airfield defense system, which comprised rockets firing wires and parachutes into the air, went into action. Full marks of the airman who did it, because I don't suppose he ever thought he'd be the chap to press the button. But I remember saying to myself, my God, and never having seen, I think I'd heard of these things, but I'd never seen them before. But suddenly this lot shoots up in front of your nose, and there's only one way to go, and that's up and fast. And we all broke very quickly. Meanwhile, the whole of Kenley was shooting off something or other, and of course the bombs were bursting below us. Got over the airfield, the other side of the airfield, and picked up another Dornier, which was right down in the valley. Chipstead, I suppose, somewhere around there. Got in a beam attack on him and hit him. I could see the strikes when I was hitting him. And it's only donkey's years later that I read a report from the actual pilot of this 17, Dornier 17, who said that was the attack that made him decide he wasn't going home. He'd been damaged over Kenley. And I got in a good long burst in his starboard quarter. And down he went, landed in a field near Biggin Hill and burnt up. Right, that's a picture of him there.
Did you... Yeah, here. Did you mean that he'd had enough of the war?
Oh, no, no, no. No, no, he knew he wasn't going to get home. He was blazing on his starboard side. And
you've got a portrait of it on your wall.
Yeah, there's a picture done by one of the aviation artists. I then had a go at another one. Again, all at 0 feet, these chaps, and can't blame them. The squadron picked up most of them. And I got a good burst in at him, claimed him as damaged. I always remember that he was going along a valley over a housing estate, and I wasn't going to fire at him because I could visualize, it's strange how these thoughts go through your mind. I could visualize women and kids in the kitchen cooking the Sunday lunch or whatever. And there's not much good me putting 8 Brownings through the roof. So I sat behind this fellow for quite a long time, and his rear gunner was popping off at me. But one of the benefits of tracer ammunition is that you can see it coming, and it's quite easy to dodge it. So I could just kick the rudder and let the tracer go past my starboard wingtip. Until such time as he was clear of the estate, and I took a quick burst at him, but that was my third attack, and I hadn't fired more than a couple hundred rounds or so of gun, and bingo, that was it. I was out of ammo. Whether he got home or not, I don't know, but not many of them did, and those that did, I think, pranged on the other side. I often wondered if that was the same squadron that attacked us low level at Vitry in early June, early on in the year. It would be a strange coincidence if it was. They clobbered us in Vitry and we clobbered them in Croydon. I've never bothered to check, but I've often wondered if it was. We went back, refueled, and scrambled again, found 5 109s I see here, and they got the hell out of it. I suppose they were cover for some of the bombers that were also working at the time, but they didn't attempt to attack us, and they cleared off, and we couldn't catch them. Presumably they're out of fuel. Nothing much happened after that. We lost Connie Connors on that attack. Pete Simpson. I always felt that Connie had hit the wires from the defense system. It has always been my feeling. Because he was leading the squadron. He was ahead of me, several hundred yards ahead of me. And I damn nearly hit him, so he must have been very, very close to him. Pete Simpson finished up on golf course. He's a very keen golfer, was Pete, so he arrived there for Sunday lunch. He'd stopped a bullet in his ankle, I think. Deacon got clobbered and bailed out. He was burnt quite badly. I think that was the limit of our casualties, but we didn't come off scot-free from that little party.
Quite a day.
Quite a day, yeah. We couldn't go back to Croydon. Been bombed, of course. There was nowhere for us to operate from. We went to Debden. Martlesham, I see, we went to. This is all in August. By which time I was becoming a father. So this 18th of August affray was 2 days before I became a father for the first time.
The affray at Canley.
So, say again?
The affray at Kenley?
Yeah.
Did you not say that was the 17th of August?
18th. 17th I did my first flights after I... after coming out of the hospital. On the 20th, I learned I was a father, and the CO said, OK, take the day off, and I grabbed the squadron register and went to Norfolk to see young CJ, who was born at home, then back to Debden, next day back to Debden. Then it was convoy patrols, Debden, Croydon, Martlesham. I had to go to 109 on the 24th when they'd raided North Weald, but it wasn't confirmed, and I don't think I did him any serious damage. A lot of convoy patrols I see here out of Martlesham, which is all a bit of a bore. There's a raid on the Thames Estuary somewhere. Then there were a scramble for three Blenheims. If I remember rightly, 30th of August, if I remember rightly, someone clobbered one of those. It wasn't our squadron, but someone else clobbered one of those Blenheims. Scramble. Three scrambles on the 31st. Didn't see anything. September. Interesting. 2nd of September. Scramble Chatham. Enemy aircraft split up. Two crashed at South End. I presume those are the Huns.
You were in what?
I presume the two that crashed at South End were the Huns. I don't know who got them. Did a head-on on the 111 on the 2nd.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I'm wondering if that's when Mike Ferris was killed. Mike collided with one head-on. As I said earlier, we practiced head-on attacks quite often. And it was an effective way of doing it, but by golly, you had split seconds.
Why was it so effective?
Well, they couldn't get any guns to bear on you. I'm talking of bombers, of course. And it scared the living daylights out of them, and I wouldn't blame them either. You know, you're flying along, minding your own business, and three Hurricanes with eight guns apiece come blazing out of your head on. There's nothing between you and them but plexiglass. Under ideal conditions, it was an effective way of attacking a chap, but you had so little time to get a bead on him and break clear. And of course, you never knew whether he was going to break up or down. Back to Croydon, scramble. Hawkinge. Hawkinge rings a bell in as much as I've often thought that not enough credit was given to the airmen there. They really were at the forward base. And those chaps would refuel you and rearm you, and the bombs could be dropping, and Hun could be strafing the place, and they really were first class. I often felt they never got enough credit for what they did. I think, in fact, we closed Hawkinge down. It just got too hot. September again, we are 6, 6, 7th, 8th, 8th. Did a beam attack on a JU-88.
What do you remember about that?
Nothing, other than the fact that Tommy Thompson was leading us. And we were very badly placed, in fact. I think we were below and to the quarter, if I remember rightly, on the port side. And it was taking a quick squirt in a climbing turn because they had 109s above them, which we could see quite clearly. And we'd never really gotten a good position to attack them. Then back, funnily enough, to Drem. They pulled the squadron out. We'd taken a pasting. Apart from the chaps who were killed, there were very few who hadn't been clobbered in some way or another. In fact, I look at a squadron picture taken in 36, not long ago. I thought I was the only chap still living, but I met up with one other, and I think that we're the only two still living from that squadron picture.
Who's he?
Fellow called Sanders, always known as Benito Sanders. He was a very Italian-looking chap. And I always thought he'd gone until I went to a Battle of Britain party at the American Air Force Base at Alconbury last year. And I walked up to the bar, and a chap came beside me, and we all had name tags on. He said, "Sergeant Brown, B Flight. Thought you'd been clobbered." I looked at him, I said, "You're no longer dark," he was silver haired. I said, "Benito Sanders, I thought you were clobbered." And he, I think, is the only chap left.
What was the date you were pulled out to Drem?
So you get.
What date were you pulled out back to Drem?
Chatham, Chaplin, Eklington, here we are. 8th.
8th of September?
Yeah.
What was morale like when you were sent up north in the squadron?
I think all right. We were all damn tired. We'd lost a lot of friends. Most of us have been clobbered in one form or another. I can't say we were sorry to be posted out of it. But at the same time, it was always an interesting thing that you sat around at standby. And the last thing you wanted to hear was the telephone. And finally the telephone went and they said, "Scramble." And from then on the adrenaline flowed. You ran as fast as you could to your aeroplane and you climbed into it and you tried to get airborne as fast as you could.